From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Dan Mitchell, Brian McClain, and Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation. We're live from Central Texas, New York, and Washington, D.C. with myself, Brian McClain, Dan Mitchell, and Lynn Shaw via TNT Radio, today's News Talk. Lynn, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing very well. There's a lot happening, as I like to say. Let's get on with it. Let's rock and roll.
Indeed. And Dan, welcome to State of the Nation.
It's Friday. I'm happy. Let's rock and roll.
All right. Well,
Dan's
Lynn,
a copycat. Dan's a copycat.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to, I'll just echo it and we'll all be copycats. We're going to rock and roll here. Lynn, why don't you kick us off with this one? I feel like this lead article here is right in your swim lane.
Got my name all over it. Parents' Bill of Rights wins zero votes from Dems who attack it as fascism, extreme attack on schools. Our House Speaker McCarthy rips extreme minority party after no Dems support Parents' Bill of Rights. Now listen, parents have rights, their children, parental autonomy. This is just another example. We pay taxes. We do not want to co-parent with the education system. We are in control. Parents are angry. Parents are unhappy. I just gave a workshop two nights ago. The room was overflowing. The parents want answers. The parents want help. They want to do this alone. They don't want the interference. They want their kids reading, writing, and arithmetic. And we know the Dems always go straight to, okay, you're a racist, or, you know, you're a fascist, you're a white supremacist. That's what they do. It's ridiculous. And I am so happy to see parents and caregivers stepping up, reclaiming their children, demanding answers, and they have every right to know what the curriculum is, the books being used. It's a no-brainer. So I say good for all the parents, good for everybody starting to make some noise and demanding answers.
I'll go just as far as that, Lynn. Why not, just like we have cameras, C-SPAN cameras covering Congress, there's no reason why parents shouldn't be able to look online at a camera on their kid's school room. Heck, you have cameras in most daycare facilities for parents to check in on their kids. There's nothing wrong, as you say, with parents knowing what's happening. And the mere fact that the education establishment doesn't want parents to know what's going on should raise our suspicions through the roof.
Yeah, let me flag up this thing that dreaded AOC had to say. She said, quote, "This Republican bill is asking the government to force the outing of LGBT people before they're ready. When we talk about progressive values, I can say what my progressive value is, and that is freedom over fascism." This is so rank. This is so sick. This is such a perversion of language and politics to use these talking points when exactly the opposite thing is happening. The school is trying to, many schools and many so-called educators inside schools, activists, are literally trying to turn kids upside down when it comes to their sexuality and trying to get them to sign up for gender transition and support them in that without even letting their parents know what's going on. So who's really, you know, who is actually forcing the outing of LGBT people, or maybe even the false creation of LGBT people with this system that she's trying to support and calling freedom fascism, just completely inverted.
And don't forget, everybody's calling the parents domestic terrorists. We have so many things going on in the United States right now, and this is the issue. And AOC, as far as AOC goes, she's nothing but a soundbite. That's all that woman is. We have to disregard everything she says. But how dare they call parents domestic terrorists and put emphasis on this with the crime, with everything. As I sit here in New York City, crime rampant all over, let's be real. And parents trying to help their children, we shouldn't even be having this conversation.
No, well, the bottom line is that my kids are older now, so I don't have to worry about it. But if something's happening at my kid's school, and if the teachers and the administrator bureaucrats are conspiring to keep it from me, that would just send me through the roof. I would go postal. I can't even put into words how angry that would make me. They're my kids. They're not the bureaucrats' kids. There was a very famous, well, not famous, but maybe to people like me, but a very amusing and telling scene in Washington years ago when I think it was Senator Phil Graham of Texas was grilling some bureaucrat on a committee who was saying that, oh, we need to pass this new program to make government bigger because we care about kids. And Senator Graham, I think I'm paraphrasing, do you care about my kids? And the bureaucrat said, yes. And then Senator Graham said, what are their names? And basically just brought down the House and exposed the phony posturing of a lot of these people on the left who want bigger government, want bureaucratic control, but obviously don't care anywhere. I mean, I'll assume they care 1/1000th of what the parents care about their children.
Wrong, Dan. I don't think they care at all. Let's just be, realistic. I want us to focus on, again, we pay our taxes. We have a right to know what's going on in the schools. We are the parents. We are the caregivers. We have a youth mental health crisis. We have addiction. We have all kinds of things going on with our children. We want them in a safe environment. We will not co-parent with the education system. We are the parents. We're in charge. They don't care.
I'll just briefly add, they're calling parents that care extreme MAGA Republicans. That is such a broad label that comes with so much political weight on it that does not apply to parents that want to have an active role in what books their kids are reading and what the educators are teaching them about sexuality.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with just basic reading, writing, and arithmetic instruction? That's what I sent my kids to school for. The values should come from parents, not from whatever bureaucrats is trendy with bureaucrats.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Your news when you need it.
They cover the important story.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So a Pennsylvania woman who was accused of stealing then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's laptop and other criminal actions at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th of 2021 has been sentenced to 3 years in prison. Here with the story, joining us now is TNT Radio news producer Adam Clark. So Ruckus, did this woman actually steal Nancy's laptop? I can't wait to hear how this one plays out.
This is the one. This is the infamous one. She's the one who was branded by prosecutors as, quote unquote, among the worst rioters and, quote, an accelerant exacerbating the mayhem, end quote. So you would think she's related to Ray Epps. This is what's going on here, folks. So U.S. District Court Judge Amy Berman Jackson handed down a sentence on Thursday against Riley Williams, whom a jury had convicted in November on 6 counts related to her actions at the Capitol. Prosecutors accused Williams of playing a key role in leading a group up a set of stairs and into Pelosi's office. A jury ultimately convicted Williams on charges, on 6 charges, including civil disorder, impeding officers, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted area, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a Capitol building, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. Prosecutors had accused Williams of stealing Pelosi's laptop and said a witness who described themselves as Williams' former romantic partner made several calls to the FBI claiming Williams had taken Pelosi's laptop or hard drive and planned, quote, to send the computer device to a friend in Russia, who then planned to sell the device to SVR, Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service, end quote. The witness told the FBI that Williams' plans to send Pelosi's laptop to Russia fell through and that she either kept or destroyed the device. The jury was ultimately deadlocked on the question of whether Williams aided and abetted in the theft of Pelosi's laptop, and the government dismissed that charge with a mistrial motion. Pelosi's office did report that a laptop went missing after the Jan 6 Capitol breach, and Pelosi spokesman Drew Hamill said at the time that the computer, quote, was only used for presentations, end quote. Prosecutors also alleged Williams used commercial-grade software, not a cloth, Mrs. Clinton, quote, to wipe her computer 6 times, end quote, in an effort to hide the evidence. Williams allegedly changed her phone number and deleted her accounts on social media platforms like Facebook, Reddit, and Parler. So the jury deadlocked on a charge alleging Williams tampered with or intimidated a witness as well. And the government could seek a new trial against Williams on the theft and witness tampering charges. We'll see. She seems a little bit, I don't know. She says that she's a responsible woman now and, quote, I barely recognize the young and stupid girl who yelled at police that day, end quote. Sounds like something a lawyer might tell her to say. What do you guys think about all this?
Wow.
Well, I say she's simply a criminal. I'm just going to jump in and say she said she got caught up in the moment. But you don't steal somebody's laptop and you don't steal Nancy Pelosi's laptop in the Capitol. I'm sorry. Even if you were ushered in peacefully, you don't steal somebody's belongings. And then she's trying to sell it to Russia. Criminal. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, if that's all true, I agree. But I'm a little unconvinced. So why was the jury deadlocked on the issue of the laptop, Ruckus? Do we know? I mean, is there proof that she actually did this, or is that why the jury was deadlocked?
Yeah, it seems, well, it's with a mistrial motion, so you'd have to speak to a lawyer about the specifics there. But I imagine, since we're not hearing the news today, that, oh, God, she was guilty 100% of stealing the laptop. And so I think that, that was a nothing burger.
Don't you think, though, they'd have a camera in Nancy Pelosi's office in the Capitol? Don't you think?
Maybe Tucker has the footage.
Maybe Dan has the footage in Washington.
Nancy Pelosi would not want cameras in her office because that would reveal to people all the sordid meetings of the special interest groups as a plot and scheme how to steal more money from the American people. Politicians like to surveil us. They don't like it the other way around.
Yeah, you never know if Paul Pelosi might use that office for any of his activities, too. You definitely don't want cameras in there. Heck, they won't even show us the security cameras from his own house after he's attacked in dubious ways. Yeah, I got to say, I'm dubious of the laptop and the hard drive, and I am very, very not convinced about the Russia thing. Like, when I hear that Russia dog whistle, it's like,
me too.
Sounds like a leftist talking point there for someone they want to stitch up. Can we think of anyone that got stitched up on this recently? Oh, yeah, the dodgy dossier and Trump himself, which turned out to be what, like a year and a half of show trials and dog and pony shows. And then they finally come out and say, well, there wasn't anything there. But, you know, we spent a year and a half doing NLP on the population so that a large portion of the population thinks it's a real thing. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, there's a new book coming out that's detailing the experience of many people that are in the DC gulags over January 6th. I think they're associated with StopHate.com and that Stop Hate group there. So that might be something that if you're listening to this out there and you're interested in this topic, you might want to check out. A lot of J6 Gulag interviews up there, calls to action. So if you really want to get in and dig through this stuff, you can check out StopHate.com. That was a good one, too. Ruckus, anything else we should know about this case?
I'm still not convinced that the actions of most of these people and, you know, this lady playing a key role and leading a group of people up a set of stairs and into somebody's office, does that really warrant 36 months in prison? That's a bit hardcore to me, especially since I know we live in a country where much, much more dangerous, hardened criminal people are just let loose every day on the streets to terrorize the population. So I question the justice side of all of this, to be honest with you.
And I want to build on that by saying that I have no objection to people being punished who attacked cops, broke in, stole laptops, things like that. The only thing that bothers me is there are lots of protests that happen in the Capitol. You know, one of the charges that Ruckus was talking about was disorderly conduct in the Capitol building. Well, what about the Code Pink protesters and all the people like that over the recent decades who engage in the same thing? I just want to make sure that one group of people isn't being treated arbitrarily worse than other groups of people who engaged in basically identically the same activities. I want one set of rules that apply equally to all of us.
And I just want to throw in there, does everybody remember during the women's speech and marches they were making with Donald Trump, that Madonna stood in front of the White House and said she's going to, I think I'm paraphrasing, she used words to the effect of, I'm going to blow up the White House or something like that. Nothing ever happened to her. Nobody cared. Unfair. We know where it's at, everybody.
Yeah.
Right. We know where it's at.
Dan, I agree with you, but as Burgess Meredith once said, classically in Grumpy Old Men or Grumpier Old Men, you can wish in one hand and crap in the other and see which one fills up first. We're stuck with this dual system of justice. We know it is not, as you said, it should be, and I agree with you, it should be that way. And if it was, we would be seeing court cases being and verdicts being handed out for people that were on the steps of the Supreme Court during Kavanaugh's, confirmation. We would see BLM and Antifa locked up for a lot of stuff, and we just don't see it. We don't see that. So I think we've defined the problem here, and we're going to keep working on that solution. All right. Thanks, Ruckus. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Joe Biden has jumped into the fray of climate once again and saying all sorts of silly, nonsensical things, as only U.S. President Joe Biden can do. That his green policies, if they are not put forward, that young people, the young generation, will be damned. He condemned kind of like children of the corn or something, kids today, unless we can go full Marxist, unless we can shut down our economy and take away free choice and do planned recessions and regulate every aspect of our lives and ban gas stoves and ban gas-powered cars and have thermostat controls in your house and destroy your dishwashers and your washing machines and stop you from eating meat and get rid of your single-family homes and racist roads and make flying a rare treat that you can only afford and only basically a playground for the rich again. Unless we do all of that and completely restructure our economy and go along, with WHO pandemics and merge COVID and then they're all going to be damned.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
Our lines are now open. Call Brian, Lynn, and Dan now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to State of the Nation. We need an attorney, and we found him. Welcome, Leo Terrell, to the program. I want to read some of your fantastic credits because it's very lengthy, but I want everybody to hear about you. You are a civil rights attorney who currently serves as a Fox News media contributor, providing commentary and analysis across all platforms, Fox News Channel, Fox Business Network. You joined the network in 2021. In addition to your role with the network, you host the Cumulus Media podcast, Leo Terrell, America's Fair-Minded Civil Rights Attorney. As a practicing member of the California Bar since 1990, you've held numerous leadership positions at organizations including Black Korean Alliance, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and California's Statewide Commission Against Hate Crimes. Additionally, you are regularly a contributor pro bono legal work while serving as a member of the NAACP, and you hold a Juris Doctor from the University of California School of Law, and the author of Your Rights in the Workplace, What Your Boss Won't Tell You. And I just want to throw in something else. Prior to beginning your career in law, you taught high school history, geography, and economics. And I could go on and on, but we want to hear you talk. So welcome to State of the Nation.
Lynn, thanks for having me. I'm blushing right now. I want to thank you. I see it.
Yeah. I hear it. Of course, I'm here along with Dan Mitchell and also Brian McLean. And first, we want to play a little sound bite, and then we're going to get into reparations.
Can California afford to pay reparations? Should they?
Can we afford it? No. Should they? No. This is a self-inflicted wound. This reparation bill, Brian, is the Frankenstein monster. Gavin Newsom signed that bill for the sole purpose of political ambition. And now the activists want him to come up with the money. Yeah. Why should people in this state pay for this? It's absolutely ridiculous.
What sayeth you, Mr. Leo Terrell?
I say that California was never a slave state. I am sick and tired of the Democrats playing the race card in this particular situation, reparations, to try to keep Black Americans within the Democratic Party and to keep Gavin Newsom's hope to run for president. I find it offensive because individuals today have no responsibility or no liability for what happened 170 years ago. It is outright offensive. As a civil rights attorney, Lynn, I would be the first one at the courthouse challenging any reparations to anyone. No one deserves reparations based upon the Civil War, period.
I like that.
It's amazing to me, Leo, because sorry there, Dan, but let me throw this out there real quick. Number one, we know that California can't afford this. We know that California has a 10 billion other things that they should be focusing on. But if this were, and I still think this is like a pie in the sky sort of politicking thing, I don't think that they're going to actually do this. I think this is, like you said, this is a media Frankenstein monster. But if they were to do this, doesn't that mean that they would have to set up basically a racial registry? Wouldn't there have to be a list of people and all of their racial classifications on it? I'm struggling to think of a time a free nation that was on the right path did that. I'm going back to Germany in the 30s and 40s in my head when I think about these kind of registries. I mean, because if you take it one step further into it, it becomes very weird. And, you know, I've noticed other people pointing out during slave era in the United States that there were Black people that owned Black slaves and that there were other white slaves. There were all these different types of people involved, and the Newsoms of the world and those that love this stuff, they seem to just want to simplify the history of the whole thing.
You're absolutely right, Brian. Let me just tell you right now. First of all, you would have some type of reparation committee or agency where all those issues that you just raised would have to be brought up. But here's the sad part about this. This was a brainchild of Gavin Newsom in 2020 during the summer of riots when this country was on fire. So he decided to parlay the George Floyd murder and the riots and came up with this reparation nonsense. And that's what it is. Where's the economic relationship between the amount of money they're seeking? In San Francisco, they want $5 million per person. In California, the state, $300,000. Where's the evidence of damages? I have not been damaged by what happened 180 years ago. And by the way, we have the Civil Rights Act. We have the Fair Housing Act. I have never been discriminated against in being a lawyer, a teacher, and being on this program. The race card is something that the Democrats will never let go. And this reparation is a way to sort of solidify it. One last point. Blacks are leaving the Democratic Party, such as myself. I left the Democratic Party in 2020. And what they're trying to do is keep Black Americans within the Democratic Party. You lose the Black base in the Democratic Party, you don't have a Democratic Party.
You know, all they'll have left is a bunch of wealthy white women, all called Karen, I guess. But I want to ask you a question, Leo. My late friend, the great Walter Williams, was an economist at George Mason University, where I got my PhD. And in one of Walter's columns, he wrote that of course slavery was a horrible institution, but that he was very fortunate that his ancestors had been mistreated and brought to America and enslaved, because He was in a country that enabled him to earn a much higher income, to be much freer, and to enjoy a much better life than presumably his distant relations that were still back in Africa and were not enslaved. So he would joke sometimes when we would go out to dinner and things like that about, well, maybe the reparations are that I should be paying money to the ancestors of the enslavers because my life is much better. And of course, he was you know, half joking and all that, but he was making a very serious point that the descendants of slaves are much better off than the people that are back in Africa. Doesn't mean slavery wasn't horrible. It is indeed America's original sin, something that is a black marker on our history. But you know, practically speaking, what sense does reparations make given the insights of people like Walter Williams?
Well, I'll tell you right now, the problem is this, and it goes back to the Democratic Party. They're in a time warp. The Democratic Party thinks it's 1944, 1955. We have black billionaires. We got black successful people. I am a product of the greatest country on the planet. I've been able to enjoy the fruits of the educational system and employment. And so when you simply provide the idea of giving someone money simply based on skin color, not based on damage, based on skin color, it defies logic. And I think it's very embarrassing. And again, for black Americans to even come up with this idea. And wasn't from black Americans, from white liberals like Gavin Newsom, who has political ambition for the sole purpose of keeping the Democratic Party intact. Again, without minorities, you don't have a Democratic Party. And the concept is government is the only way to save yourself in this country, and the Republican Party is evil. I can sit here and tell you right now, the Republican Party is not evil.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Leo, hold the line for a second here, please. We're going to take a quick headline with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Here we go.
TNT Radio News.
News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A Pennsylvania woman who was among a crowd of protesters that breached the U.S. Capitol building during the January 6, 2021 riot in Washington, D.C., was sentenced on Thursday to 36 months in prison. Dmitry Medvedev, a former Russian president now serving as deputy chairman of the country's Security Council, said on Thursday that any attempts to arrest President Vladimir Putin on the International Criminal Court's warrant of war crimes would be considered a declaration of war against the country.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
We're back with civil rights attorney Leo Terrell. Leo, sorry about the flushing of the toilet commercial, but, you know, that's how we are at TNT. I want to remind everybody, your website, the Leo Terrell, TERRELL.com. And also you have a great Twitter at the Leo Terrell. You know, you mentioned schools a minute ago, and I wanted to ask you, NAACP Florida chapters recommending travel advisory amid the DeSantis policies. What do you have to share with us about that?
Thank you, Lynn, for that question. I'm more proud of myself as being a school teacher than a lawyer. And education is a key way to break the poverty cycle. And I, you know, you mentioned one of my credentials. I was an NAACP attorney, no longer, because I'm sick of the race card. And what the NAACP in Florida is trying to create, a false image that Ron DeSantis is racist, that he's trying to eliminate African-American history. That's a lie. He's trying to eliminate critical race theory. He's trying to eliminate the expansion of this concept that based on skin color, one group of people are privileged and the others are not. And what I find the NAACP is doing is starting again the early attack on a Republican governor who's been very, very successful in reforming Florida, especially the educational system, and downplaying the influence of teachers unions that are literally destroying public education in this country. California is a perfect example.
Well, speaking of that, Florida is right in the middle of the process of finalizing a big expansion of school choice statewide. And boy, talk about something that should be hailed as a civil rights victory, enabling kids to escape failing government schools in the inner cities. I can't imagine something better. But of course, because some of our friends on the left put teacher unions above children, they're the ones fighting it.
Daniel, you are spot on. We just experienced in the city of L.A. a three-day dog and pony teacher strike, union strike of the staff workers. Look, these unions, these public unions do not care about school-aged children, these public school unions, these government schools. I'll tell you right now, you don't have this problem in private or religious schools. And this is a perfect example why school choice is critical for people of color, people of all colors, because again, education is the only way to break the poverty cycle. The teacher unions are nothing more than agents of the Democratic Party. Finally, I would submit to you that I would not be on your program today if I didn't get a great education. 30 years ago, public education, public schools were fantastic. Now you look at these Democratic cities, you look at these teacher unions in LA, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Chicago, they are a disaster center. It's an embarrassment.
Well, yeah, I quoted earlier my friend Walter Williams. I don't know Tom Sowell well enough to be friends, but he had a great line, which is that he's so thankful that he went to school before teachers decided they liked black kids because they didn't hold them to lower expectations. Instead, yeah, they taught them and made them learn.
Hey, I was a product of those great public schools some 30 years ago.
Yeah, I follow Thomas Sowell also on Twitter, and you know, much like you, Leo, you guys are very inspirational, and I just don't understand. I do not understand why the public has been. I mean, I do understand why. It's just staggering to me how the public has been brought to the point where they will actually look at people like you and Thomas and others and call them racists for not abiding to, you know, not abiding to the talking point, not abiding to the narrative. It's like you guys are great intellectuals. You are subject matter experts, and you speak to everybody. I really feel like you speak to everybody, and it's just amazing. It reminds me of, you know, one of the first things we covered on the show today was this this bill, the Parents' Rights Bill that the House has passed this week,
right?
And you know it's not going to pass the Senate. You know it's not going to hit Biden's desk. And it's just like they're calling parents who want to have a say in their students' education, quote unquote, extreme MAGA Republicans. The way they try to broad stroke that across anyone that is any like it's almost everyone. They're calling so many people extreme MAGA Republicans who didn't vote, who don't like Donald Trump, who might even be liberal or might even, you know, obviously they're not far progressive, but I just feel like they're trying to call these huge groups of people MAGA Republicans, extremists, and even terrorists for simply wanting to have a voice in their child's education.
Well, I'll tell you, Brian, it's very simple. The Democrats believe in power and control. And if you do not agree with them 100% of the time, you're canceled. Let me be as clear as I can about this. The biggest problem with the left is that they have allies. We talked about the teachers union. And thank goodness for TNT Radio. Thank goodness for Fox. Because 95% of the media is in bed with the Democratic Party. And so people don't get the information. I mean, we're giving people facts on this program right now. But 95% of the media will lie to the public, will do the bidding of the Democratic Party, and that's why it's an uphill battle. But we have to keep fighting. We have to keep getting the facts out there. And hopefully, people are going to wake up and see that they have been lied to by the Democratic Party and by the mainstream media and these special interest organizations like teachers unions.
And I think the best thing that's happened over the last couple of years is the parents saw and caregivers what was going on with their kids. If anything came out of all of that mess, that's the way I like to look at it. Leah, I just want to throw in something. I do a lot of work with girls of color, women of color. I'm here in New York City. And all of these big mouths and these so-called feminists, nobody is helping that population. I know from my work, with, you know, sex trafficking and education. And I say every day, put your energies, you people on the left, you women, into this, because you pointed out education is what it's all about, feeling safe and education. And that is being ignored. And we rail for this every single day. And I cannot believe we've got to hear about LGBTQIA. We do not co-parent in our schools, parental autonomy. I'm going to still say, who is taking care of the population I work with? And I've also been told, you're blonde and white, you can't work, you know, either nobody's going to listen to you. And it's shocking and shameful.
I'll tell you, Lynn, it's part of the Democratic prescription on trying to divide this country. The race card is a powerful weapon for the Democrats. They won't let it go. And what you have here, I believe the Democrats do what they call misdirection. The issues of importance, crime, eliminating crime, good education, they don't deal with those issues because they are on the wrong side. They try to divert the attention, and they do a very good job, into these emotional hot button issues, making arguments that are not really the issues of the day. Education, homelessness, crime, the Democrats will run away from those issues. But they focus on these social issues, and they claim that these issues are being ignored for reasons that I just really cannot understand.
Leo, give us some final thoughts. Yeah, go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to ask, you're out in California, right?
Yes.
What do you think is going to be the net result of all this stuff? What is Gavin Newsom obviously has designs to be president. What do you think is his thinking in sort of pushing this hard left agenda?
Well, I'll tell you right now, Gavin Newsom mentally has checked out as governor. He's lame duck. He drops to his knees every day and hope Joe Biden doesn't run. People have asked me to leave California because it's basically committed to being a blue state. I'm not going to give up on California. I'm hoping that we need to turn around school district by school district, small city council by small city council. We got to take very small baby steps. But as far as Gavin Newsom, as far as the state of California, it's in a disastrous state right now. It's horrific. Do I see immediate change in California? I'm going to be honest. No, I don't see immediate change. That's why people in California are leaving. We lost population. But I'm not going to give up on California. I think we need a strong Republican Party, and we're going to take it inch by inch, city by city, school district by school district. But Lynn said reference regarding the school and what happened in Virginia. Look, they found out about what was going on in those classrooms. They were called domestic terrorists, and they elected a Republican governor, a Glenn Youngkin.
Well, Leo,
that's the state I vote in.
Yeah, good point. Dan, good point.
You know, Leo Terrell, we just love you, and we want to have you back, and you're just simply terrific. I want to remind everybody, theleoterrell.com, also on Twitter, @theleoterrell. Thank you for joining us today. Please come back and visit us again. You have to fill us in about the state of California. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Leo.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
So I'm cruising the internet, and while on the Fox News side, I come across this headline. Tradwives push back against critics who say their viral homemaking lifestyle is alarming and creepy. So my first step was to find out what a tradwife is. According to the piece, it's a relatively new term for traditional wives. Tradwives are women who honor femininity, care for their husbands, their children, and family, and value the state of their home more than they do salary, yet they're not subservient. So at first you may ask yourself, how could anyone find that to be alarming or creepy? I mean, that's how it was when I was growing up in the U.S., and I'll tell you what, family life was far superior to what we have today, and kids had the security of a two-parent upbringing with a mom who was always there. Single-parent moms weren't lining up at 8 a.m. to dump their three-month-old at daycare while on their way to work. The social media hashtag tradwife received millions of impressions. And guess what? 92% of searchers had a negative view of tradwives, which speaks to just how far the fabric of the family has fallen and how much danger our kids are in. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
are our love bugs and companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life better. When we face unexpected challenges, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people and their pets. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
You're with Brian McClain, Dan Mitchell, and Lynn Shaw, and State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's jump right in. Our guest is Landon Starbuck. Welcome, Landon Starbuck, to State of the Nation.
Thanks so much for having me, Lynn.
First, I want to give some of your incredible credits. Landon Starbuck is the founder of Freedom Forever, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting children from abuse, trafficking, and exploitation. Landon is a national speaker, activist, writer, and warrior for children. Her work is regularly featured on Fox News, Breitbart, The Federalist, Daily Wire, Post Millennial. It goes on and on. And now TNT Radio. Landon is passionate about truth, justice, freedom, and protecting all children. Landon left the music industry as a Billboard charting singer-songwriter to use her voice advocating for women and children who've experienced trafficking and exploitation. In 2021, Landon directed the largest coalition and demonstration at our southern border, exposing the human trafficking crisis and abuse of children. And I want to point out, in 2022, Landon was invited to give a TEDx talk at the historic Franklin Theater. Months after receiving a standing ovation, she was told her talk, Stopping the Epidemic of Child Trafficking and Exploitation, was banned by TEDx for supposedly violating their content guidelines, yet they failed to cite any part of the talk that violated the guidelines. Landon has been a leading voice in combating child mutilation and the harms of radical gender ideology. And Landon just got back, literally hours ago, from Washington, D.C. She's going to fill us all in about TikTok. I want to point out freedomforever.us is the website. We got to get to you. There's so many more credits, but we got to hear your voice. We want to hear about what's going on in Washington. So the floor is yours, Landon.
Thank you so much for that great introduction, Lynn. I just got back from Washington, D.C. at a banned TikTok conference sponsored by the Heritage Foundation. We know in this space of child exploitation, combating it, that big tech is one of the top violators of that. But what sets other companies apart from TikTok is that TikTok is not actually just a social media company. They're masquerading as a social media company, but they're actually a weapon of psychological operations, harvesting very sensitive data, the data of future generations of Americans. And how they've been able to weaponize that is a very hard to understand thing, because there's such a lack of transparency. You can't hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable for anything, not the weather balloons that fly over our head in our country, and not the psychological operations that they're conducting. So we have to treat this as a serious national security issue that it is, and not just as a ban a social media company. This is about our safety and security of public health and safety risk as well. So that is why we have made the conclusion that there is no way to hold them accountable further. All of these conversations going back and forth, we have to ban them at this point.
A countrywide ban, like full on. And we were talking about this yesterday on the show. And I was saying, well, gosh, you know, tell me what you think of this idea, because I feel like Instagram is doing the exact same thing, even if it's just by allowing people to post all their TikTok stuff there. But I know it's more than that, because they amplify the extreme sexual content a lot, and they amplify a lot of this stuff that goes directly into the brains and eyeballs of young impressionable people. And it just feels like there's all the information that you've helped uncover, and then there's readily available the social dilemma on the streaming services. So people should be cued into how even our American social media platforms are perpetrating some of the same assaults on particularly our youth and family units, you know, and people's self-esteem. I mean, it's such a deep topic. It really is like a form of hybrid warfare that I feel like is happening right here out of Silicon Valley into everybody's, little black mirror that we carry around in our pockets. And I just feel like if we could clean that up at home, that would help a lot too. I'm just trying to figure out which one to do first. Like, do we cut TikTok off at the head, or do we impose the regulations or laws or whatever needs to be in place to protect people from our own Silicon Valley corporations? Which is more important in your head, and what's the right order of operations?
Well, I agree with you on a lot of these fronts, and we've been fighting this. I know Lynn has been fighting it. I've been fighting it for many years. I mean, we don't even have any action in our own Congress and this administration to protect kids from the harms that we're experiencing on all social media companies that are actually operating in America. The difference, though, is with national security risks and threats. And what is happening with TikTok is that they're not just another social media platform exploiting children, which is sad that that's the case, that none of these should be able to do this without being regulated. If any of us opened a small business that had done what they've done to kids, we would be shut down in a heartbeat. So I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Those fights are ongoing and never ending. We will continue to fight. But when we're dealing with a national security threats, our threat to this magnitude, our greatest foreign enemy allowed unmitigated access to our children to take this data. And some people think, oh, they already know what kind of, you know, soup I drink or what kind of show I watch. That's not the kind of data we're talking about exploiting. We're not talking about just monetization of that data. We're talking about psychological manipulation. So they will introduce, if a child says, I'm confused about my sexuality or I'm frustrated with my sexuality, and they feed that into the algorithm, they will suggest suicide videos. This is a different level of warfare than we've ever been used to, and it has to be treated with that. And we have bipartisan, I mean, experts in national security both saying this is dangerous enough to shut down at the federal level. This is a risk enough. Well, what about our American citizens? What risks are we willing to subject them to? And that's, you know, we shoot down these spy balloons. That's a national security threat, but we can have access to our children, a foreign adversary. I think that's what the distinction is that there's a different, you know, level of threat.
Landon, let me jump in and ask a follow-up because Brian asked you, what's the difference between, say, Instagram and TikTok? Are the algorithms different? Is Instagram or something else less likely to give you suicide videos? What I've read about these, what social media in general, not just TikTok, is that if someone has a problem, say a young girl's anorexic, they'll sort of get funneled into a group of anorexics and all feed upon themselves. No pun intended. They'll all like bond with each other and maybe get worse. And so I'm wondering, is it social media or is it TikTok? Are the algorithms different in a way that makes TikTok more dangerous? Set aside national security. I realize that's an issue, but in terms of just wanting, you know, teenagers not to have messed up lives, are the algorithms the same or different?
Well, it's hard to answer that question because they will not be transparent about how they're conducting these algorithms and how they are abusing children with that. And we've tried to get those answers, but they won't give them those answers. So if we were to indict, say, Instagram or Facebook, they would be subjected to a very rigorous process to expose what that code is. The problem is the code is poison because it's being operated by the CCP. ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, is in China. They're subjected to and protected by the CCP. So we don't have access to that. And if we don't have access to that, we cannot definitively say how dangerous these algorithms are. How we know that they have the ability to obtain biometric data, geofencing location. That's not something that American companies are actually looking into because they know that would spark a fiery inquiry into them for abusing children. So there's a different level of magnitude when we're talking about the sensitive type of data being harvested. And to give you an example, I just want you to imagine they have access to the DMs, the behind the scenes stuff. We're not just talking about the exploitive content that's out in the open for all to see. You know, we know that there's that. But if a child was to send a nude image or something compromising, the CCP is going to archive that. Say that child runs for office later or is in some other position of influence or power and policy over American national security. They will then have that type of compromising data on every single American, every single child to use against them. And we all know that that already exists, but this is a weapon that we can't even really conceive of the power that they have and what they're obtaining with this data.
And this is forever data, right? And once it's obtained by one entity, who's to say it can't be sold or stolen from said entity? You know, it all feeds into the big data thing. And I think that's something that most Americans don't really think about very often. Like, what is big data? They like you said, a lot of people think it's about oh, well, you know, when I talked about a Toyota, all of a sudden I see all these Toyota ads. It's just for marketing so they can cater the marketing to me. That's not it at all, because the most personal things about people, like you pointed out, happens in direct messaging on all the apps, a bazillion different apps. But when it comes to the big ones, you know, the apex predators, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, those ones, that information, once you type a message into there, same with your Google mails, everybody, once you, that information is now part of your big data profile. And we have no idea of knowing who owns it, how many people own it, where they share it, why they share it. But we do know here in America, it's all archived at that one NSA center, multi-gazillion dollar center in Utah, and that our federal agencies and arguably anyone that has access to, say, Palantir software, be it the corporate version or the government version, can pull up a 3D image of any person in the country that knows everything about them, including all those, you know, nudie pics and personal things that were said. And then what could be done with that is almost unimaginable.
Right. And to speak to that point, over 141 images of CSAM were flagged by TikTok, and they reported less than 0.5% of that explicit content to NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That means all of those children that were abused, that was not actionable. Those were lost files. And what kind of transparency do you have? We don't answer to the CCP. And that's the problem with allowing a company, a foreign adversary, our greatest one, to operate with unmitigated access to exploit children with zero accountability or transparency.
Let me jump in here, Landon. We work on many issues behind the scenes while at Washington policy, and we know our last Congress, the 117th, nothing was done with kids, right? We tried so hard. We have a lot of good pending bills. Where do you think this will go with TikTok? Do you think this might be the case that'll start to change things, or what's your feeling about all of this?
I think that they're going to decouple, that there's going to be some sort of arrangement to sell off the company to a third party to remedy the situation. However, there's still, you know, very grave concerns there. That's what I think will happen. I don't think that they're outright going to ban it, but I think that those conversations are still happening right now. That's what I think is going to happen is a sell off.
I think I heard Donald Trump talking about that. Didn't he want to shut it down and was pushing them to push to sell off and all of that? And then that all went away. Let me ask you, what do you think right now is you're very much at the forefront of educating? I want to switch gears a little bit about this medical indoctrination going on and rampant. Now, you're in the state of Tennessee. Your state's doing some great things. Fill us in about what's going on with all of that.
Absolutely. So we banned child mutilation. We banned puberty blockers, hormones, and the medical exploitation of children in our state recently. And it was a very long fight. We did it. So I'm very proud of being a part of that that ban in our state to protect children.
You should be proud because you were there marching and rallying up the troops and making everybody become a warrior. So that's what we need out of our Americans, to come together, right? Stand up and get out there. What would you say right now? What would you tell parents or caregivers, grandparents? I always say that because families today are made up of all different kinds of people. The number one or two things they should be on the immediate lookout for, because everybody's overwhelmed. Everything is horrible every day. They can't handle it. What would you say? Basic, you know, something basic that they should really be looking at right now.
Absolutely. Well, I would definitely direct people to our website, freedomforever.us, because we have great resources to help with all of the areas that are attacking our children, from school indoctrination to the gender ideology to online harms in more specific detail, so that we can walk parents through that process, giving them the best resources and tools necessary. But I'd say the two things that parents can do, being involved in their children's lives, not giving kids access to smartphones, and also making sure that the environments they put their kids into, whether it be school, whether it be with babysitters or after school programs, that they really vet the type of people that they're putting their children with for 8 hours plus a day, because that has the greatest influence, the person that is spending the most time with that child.
Lynn, did you ever find out, did they ever give you any more updates recently about your TEDx talk?
No.
Because we have accounts, we have backup accounts, we've got everything going on, just nothing?
No, I mean, that ship, you know, I've moved on from that. It's very clear that there is a political bias that's happening within, you know, that organization. I didn't find out that the talk was banned until they just refused to post it. And I noticed that everybody else I did the talk with, their talks got uploaded. And I was like, what's taking so long? And so I inquired, and there was just a back and forth, and they just decided to make up, you know, whatever excuse that I violated an inflammatory policy guideline. Very subjective, but here we are. You know,
well, it's a good speech. It's a good speech. So I want it for everybody to, you know, to hear about it. But I think you posted it. It is posted on one of your various backup accounts. Oh, mm-hmm. Landon Starbuck, we have so much more to talk to you about. Thank you for joining us today. Everybody, the website, freedomforever.us. Leave us with some final thoughts. What do you have to say?
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me on. Just please keep fighting for children. If we can't fight to protect our most vulnerable, nothing else matters.
Thanks, Landon.
Thank you.